And now, Stein Online presents Mark Stein on the Town.
Celebrating Sinatra with his conductor, Vincent Falcone.
Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York.
That's where we left it at the end of part one of our Sinatra centenary conversation with Vincent Falcone, with Vinny and Frank going into the studio 36 years ago to start spreading the news. That's undoubtedly the most famous Sinatra record Vincent Falcone ever conducted, but we'll hear some equally fine music from the singer and his conductor and pianist in today's show, and we'll also hear Frank Sinatra conducting, conducting a Vincent Falcone arrangement. But let's kick things off with one of those songs Sinatra sang a zillion times and never tired of and always brought an incredible energy to. Exhibit A, 1982, the Dominican Republic, Vincent Falcone conducts the Buddy Rich Orchestra.
I have got you under my skin. I have got you deep in the heart of me. So deep in my heart, you are a part of me. I've got you under my skin. I have tried so not to give in. I have said to myself, this affair, it ain't gonna go too well. But why should I try to resist when, baby, I know so well that I've got you under my skin. Sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice. Comes in the night, it repeats in my ear. Don't you know, you fool, you're not gonna win. Use your mentality, wake up to reality. And each time I do, just the thought of you makes me stop before I begin. 'Cause I've got you under my skin. You dirty rat. Holla, 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 holla. Sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of having you near, in spite of a warning voice. Comes in the night, it repeats how it yells in my ear. Don't you know, you fool, you ain't never gonna win. Why not use your mentality? Wake up, get up to reality. And each time I do, just the thought of you makes me stop just before I begin. Skin, and I dig you under my skin. I would sacrifice anything, come what might, for the sake of having you near, spite of a warning voice. Comes in the night, it repeats how it yells in my ear. Don't you know, you no way to win. Why not use your mentality? Wake up, step up to reality. And each time I do,
the thought of you makes me stop just before I begin. 'Cause I've got you under my skin, and I dig you.
Where does it hurt you, baby? Under his skin. Frank Sinatra, conducted by our guest today, Vincent Falcone.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're most well. You're a marvelous audience, and I love you dearly. I love you.
You did what became one of the great set pieces of Sinatra on stage in this period, and it was really the last addition to his saloon song repertory. Done One for My Baby and Angel Eyes, mm-hmm. and this time round, and again, it's an unusual, it's very unusual. He didn't do a lot of medleys, lots of, you know, Mel Torme, like nothing better than a 17-song medley. Sinatra wasn't in that game, and this is really the only medley in his catalogue, and you were a big part of the birth of that.
May I tell you this? We were at Caesars. And he brought this arrangement in. Now, this arrangement was, the gal that got away, it never entered my mind, the two songs. They were both original arrangements by Nelson Riddle, but they were individual songs.
Right. Just to be clear here, he'd recorded both songs with Nelson Riddle back in the 50s.
The night is bitter, the stars have lost their glitter, the winds grow colder, and suddenly you're older. And all because of the gal that got away.
The Gal That Got Away, a big hit single in 1954, and then from 1955, the album In the Wee Small Hours, It Never Entered My Mind.
Once I laughed when I heard you say that I'd be playing solitaire, uneasy in my easy chair. It never entered my mind.
And he wanted to put them together. He saw the connection. So he had Don Costa take the two arrangements and fix them so that they could go one to the next. And when I saw the arrangement for the first time, when he brought it into Caesars and he put it on the piano, when it got to the end of The Gal That Got Away, going into It Never Entered My Mind, there was an orchestration written for that. And it above that on the music, it said, piano only optional. So we rehearsed it once with the orchestra. And then he said, let's do it again. And Vinny, you play it this time. So we did.
Once I laughed when I heard you saying that I'd be playing solitaire, uneasy in my easy chair. It never entered my mind. Once you told me I was mistaken, that I'd awaken with the sun and order orange juice for one. It never entered my mind. You have what I lack myself. Now I even have to scratch my back myself. Once you warned me that if you scorned me, I'd say a lover's prayer again and wish that you were there again to get into
never entered my mind.
Didn't say a word. Went home. When I got home, I went to the piano and I spent the couple of hours between rehearsal and the show working out exactly how I would play it, knowing full well that when I got back, I would never get that chance, but I was determined to be prepared. So I go back to the hotel that night for the show, fully expecting that we would do the orchestration version of it. And Jilly came out of the dressing room and he says, "Hey, he wants you to do it." Well, I knew what he meant. I did it that night, and it never changed. It was that way forever. And we never did the other version of it ever. And that's another one of those things that happens to you that you never forget in your whole life.
And again, it's wonderful just after you've got the full band doing The Gal That Got Away at the front and back. But in the middle, you've got just you and him.
Yes.
And again, that Gordon Jenkins lesson of keeping your eyes on the singer, because with that marvelous Larry Hart line in that song, "Uneasy in my easy chair,"
yeah,
which I just said in 1.4 seconds, but he could extend the ease in easy chair.
Exactly.
He liked to put about 17, 18, 19 E's in there, and that's right. Got to be... You've got to keep an eye on him to know whether this is a 12 E night or right. a 37 E night.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's very astute of you to notice that, Mark. I'll tell you. But you hit the nail right on the head. You, those are the things that, you know. His favorite line is, "Where are you working next week? If you didn't do things the way you were supposed to do them or learn quickly, he never right. came to you and said, "Hey, you know, you should do it this way or you shouldn't do it that." That was not his style. You just weren't there. That's all. It was somebody else. So right. you had to learn quick, and he taught me that. And he was a unique man.
The night is bitter, the stars have lost their glitter, the winds grow colder, suddenly you're a lot older. And all because of a gal who got away. No more her eager call, the writing is on the wall. All those dreams you dream, they have all gone astray. The gal who won you, she's run off and undone you. That great beginning has seen the final inning. I don't know what happened. It's all a crazy game. No more, no more that all-time thrill, because you have been put through the mill, and never a new love will ever be the same. Once I laughed when I heard you say that I'd be playing solitaire, uneasy in my easy chair. It never entered my mind. Once you told me I was mistaken,
that I'd awaken with the sun and order orange juice for one. It never entered my mind you have what I lack myself. Now I even have to scratch my back myself. Once you warned me that if you scorned me, I'd say a lover's prayer again and wish that you were there again. To get into my hair again, it never entered my mind. Good riddance, goodbye. Every trick of hers you are on to, but fools will be fools. And where's she gone? Where has she gone? The road gets rougher, it's lonelier and it's tougher. With hope you burn up, tomorrow maybe she'll turn up. There ain't no let up. Live long night, night and day. Ever since this world began, there ain't nothing sad. Looking for his gal who got away. Please come back. Won't you come back?
Let's talk about one of those where you're working next week moments. I couldn't get over this, but you write about it in your book. Al Viola had basically a four-decade relationship with Frank Sinatra, going back to the Page Cavanaugh trio in the 1940s. I think that's the first time they recorded together. They did on that world tour in the early 1960s, a beautiful version of Night and Day he does just with guitar. That's Al Viola on guitar. They fabulous, you know, four-decade history. And as you tell it in your book, it all comes to an end because Al Viola doesn't want to take a car ride with a string player.
You know, to this day, and of course, when Mr. Sinatra died, Al was at the funeral too, and he had great respect, even though that happened. But Al, it was Al's choice. I'll never understand this as long as I live. We were going to do a concert in Palm Springs, a benefit that we used to do every year that Mr. Sinatra used to do for the hospital in Palm Springs. And the attendance for this thing was so enormous that the hotels in Palm Springs, and in those days there weren't as many as there are now, didn't have enough rooms to be able to accommodate all of the members of the orchestra, which came from L.A., for the overnight. So Mr. Sinatra told me to have the band to arrange for a bus to take them down and bring them back after the show. And if any of them wanted to drive themselves, they were more than welcome to do so, but they weren't going to be staying overnight in Palm Springs. So I called Al, Al said, I can't drive at night. My sight isn't that good. I said, well, I understand that. Al said, you can ride on the bus. Al said to me, I don't ride on a bus. Right. I said, well, then let me get one of the musicians to share this car with you. He said, no, I don't ride with musicians. I said, Al. He said, tell Mr. Sinatra to get somebody else to play that night. He said, you know, it's only a benefit. You don't need me. Right. I called Mr. Sinatra. And his answer was, yeah, you get somebody else, and you get somebody else from now on. I called Al back. I said, Al, you're making a huge mistake. I'm calling you because I think what you should do is call Mr. Sinatra and tell him, look, I'm sorry, I had a bad day today, had an argument with my wife, whatever you want to say. Tell him I shouldn't have said that. I'm stupid, and I apologize, and I'll be there. He wouldn't do that. He said, it was nice working with you, and he hung up.
And that was it. Well, let's hear you and Al Viola and Frank Sinatra all together in Happier Times.
Here's a little jazz treatment of something you know. We feature our quartet. Baubles, bangles, hear how they ring, ring-a-ling-a. Baubles, bangles, and beads. Sparkles, spangles, hear how they jing-jing-a-ling-a. Wearing baubles and beads. Your glitter and gleam so, you're gonna make somebody dream, so that someday he may get you a ring, ring-a-ling-a, and you know where that's gonna lead. When you're wearing baubles, bangles, and beads, Gene Kelly. Al Viola, one of the best in the world from Los Angeles, playing guitar solo. That was another Gumbad over here from Las Vegas, Vinnie Falcone over here. And the pickpocket playing the bass is another Gumbad, Gene Chirico from Los Angeles. Baubles, bangles, hear how they ring, ring-a-ling-a. Baubles, bangles, and beads. Spangles. Jing-jing-a-ling-a, when you're wearing all those beads, you'll glitter and gleam so, you're gonna make some poor soul dream, so that someday he may snatch you a ring, ring-a-ling-a, and you know where all of this stuff's gonna lead. When you're wearing baubles, bangles, and beads, I mean all those baubles, bangles, and those cuckoo beads. Al Viola, Vinnie Falcone, Gene Chirico, and Eric Cochran. Please rise.
I'll never understand that as long as I live. But Mr. Sinatra told me to get another guitarist, and I did, and we ended up with Tony Mottola, where you couldn't end up with a better guitar player than that anyway, so it all worked out. But I just can't understand what Al's reasoning was at that time. I just don't. I've never been able to figure it out. And, of course, he's gone now, so he can't tell us either.
But it's just it's amazing the way what seem the smallest, least consequential things can kind of spiral into, you know, a huge, unbridgeable chasm in nothing flat. Although, as you say, you did get Tony Mottola, and we got all those nice things like that little record they made at Sunday.
Yeah, isn't that great? That's great.
And of course, this lovely quiet moment with Tony Mottola and you guys.
Quiet nights of quiet stars, quiet chords from the guitar, floating on the silence that surrounds us. Quiet thoughts and quiet dreams, quiet walks by quiet streams, and the window looking on the mountains and the sea. How lovely. This is where I want to be, here with you so close to me, until the final flicker of life's ember. I was lost and lonely, believing life was only a bitter tragic joke, have found with you the meaning of existence, oh my love. And lonely, believing life was only a bitter tragic joke, have found in you the meaning of existence, oh my love. Quiet nights and quiet stars, cause quiet nights.
Mr. Tony Mottola.
Irv Kotler was a terrific drummer, but he was, as you describe it, he was a kind of disruptive presence on stage and in the studio.
Well, I mean no disrespect to Irv Kotler, because he's gone, and God bless him. But Irv, and I was told this by Mr. Sinatra. I'm not telling you something that it's not my opinion. It's a fact. Irv played drums for Mr. Sinatra exactly the way he wanted a drummer to play for him, but that was the extent of Irv's ability. He was not a drummer that could play different styles. When we did Mr. Reagan's inauguration and Charlie Pride and other people were on the show and for whom he had to play, he had a big, big problem. And I believe that the fact that he knew that, I believe, caused some, he questioned himself or whatever. He was uncomfortable. He always thought that somebody was going to take his place, and that couldn't have been. Irv Kotler had the most secure position that anyone could have with Mr. Sinatra, because Mr. Sinatra loved the way he played. But he made life difficult for not only me, but for Don Costa, for Nelson Riddle, for everybody to whom Mr. Sinatra paid attention. And if he thought that Mr. Sinatra was paying more attention to you than he was paying to him, then he would become upset and cause a problem. And I'm sorry for that. He and I tried very hard to get along with him. I knew you can read it in the book, but as I say, he was a terrific drummer for Mr. Sinatra, and unfortunately couldn't enjoy it.
Now, you said something rather interesting about that in the book, because most music in this sphere, if you pick up a Sinatra album from the 1950s, it's arranged and conducted by Nelson Riddle, it's arranged and conducted by Billy May. But the Don Costa actually preferred to be on the other side of the glass in the control room and have somebody else conduct his arrangements, in part because of the way Irv Kotler would be breaking things up and whatever.
Don, it wasn't only because of that. Don was one of the greatest arrangers of our time, but he was not a conductor, not a very good conductor. As a matter of fact, neither was Billy. Until I came along, and Mr. Sinatra gave me the honor of conducting his recording sessions, the only one of them that really was, in my humble opinion, was really a proficient conductor was Gordon Jenkins, and Don just didn't want to have to stand in front of the orchestra. And so when we would do arrangements with him, I would conduct it, and eventually it ended up that I conducted for everything. And that was, as I told you before, that was a tremendous thing for me because I was standing in front of some of the musicians that I had admired since I was a kid, you know.
well, round about that period, Sinatra himself liked to conduct, and he conducted right around that period. He conducted a vocal album for Sylvia Sims and an album for your trumpeter, Charles Turner. Did you ever pass comment on your boss's conducting ability?
Well, I did both of those albums, of course, with him. And when it came to Sylvia's, it was because Sylvia and he were very good friends, and Sylvia became, and I don't mean to sound strange about it, but Sylvia became like a mother figure to me. She also liked the way I played. I played for her a lot, and she taught me a great deal about how to play for a singer. She being with her.
Some weeks ago, I was touring around town, and one of the saloons we went into is a cute saloon called Michael's Pub. And in Michael's Pub at that time was a lady singing songs who was one of the finest female vocalists in the history of pop music. And she was working there. Say hello to Sylvia Sims. She's sitting right down here. Yeah, take it back. Hey, something else, boy. When she works in New York, you go hear her. When are you going to give me your body?
And they were good friends. And she told me one day that one of the biggest disappointments in her life was that she had never done a recording with Mr. Sinatra. And I told him that one night when we were in the car driving from the hotel up to Carnegie Hall. And he immediately arranged for us to do a recording, and he had Don write the arrangements. And then Don got sick, and I had to finish. I did three of the arrangements on that album and recorded it with him. And he did do some of the conducting, but when it came to the difficult parts, he would make me do it. So, you know, I mean, when it comes to conducting, it wasn't that he knew how to conduct. It was that he knew how to communicate with the orchestra. It's one thing to be a technically correct conductor in terms of your motions. It's another thing to be able to combine that with your ability to communicate to the orchestra that which you want from them. Right. And it isn't necessarily the technical aspect that does that. It's the personal aspect that does that. And he had that talent unquestionably.
Well, let's hear a track from that album. Frank Sinatra conducting Sylvia Sims in a song he himself had sung 20-something years earlier. Arrangement here by Vincent Falcone.
You go to my head and you linger like a haunting refrain, and I find you spinning round in my brain like the bubbles in a glass of champagne. You go to my head like a sip of sparkling burgundy brew, and I find the very mention of you like the kicker in a julep or two. The thrill of the thought that you might give a thought to my plea, cast a spell over me. So I say to myself, get a hold of yourself. Can't you see that it never can be? You go to my head with a smile that makes my temperature rise like a summer with a thousand Julys. You intoxicate my soul with your eyes. Though I'm certain that this heart of mine hasn't a ghost of a chance in this crazy romance. You go to my head.
And as a matter of fact, if you've ever seen the record, the video of the song that I wrote for my wife that he used to feature me on in the show, and he would be get on the podium and conduct it and feature me. I mean, that was one of the, you can't even imagine what an honor that was, but that's on video, and you can see that if you come across it on YouTube or whatever, but right. He did that too. So he was able to do that with the orchestra, but technically he didn't know what to do. So when it became a point where technique had to be incorporated into the conducting, then he would make me do it.
right. He gave the impression sometimes that in a different life he would quite have liked to have been.
I think so. Yeah. I do believe so. He was a consummate musician, you know. I mean, right. he heard. And I'll tell you this, too. He was a very polite man. And when he came to the musicians, I never, ever was witness to him talking down to a musician.
Well, let's hear another of your arrangements from that album, because I really like this one. It's another song that Sinatra himself had sung. Here he conducts Sylvia Sims.
I took a trip on a train, and I thought about you. I passed a shadowy lane, and I thought about you. Two or three cars parked under the stars, a winding stream. Moon shining down on some little town, and with each beam, same old dream. With every stop that we made, I thought about you. And when I pulled down the shade, then I really felt blue. I peeked through the crack and I looked at the track, the one going back to you. And what did I do? I thought about you. Thank you. or three cars parked under the stars, a winding street. Moon shining down on some little town, and with each beam, the same old dream. With every stop that we made, I thought about you. And then when I pulled down the shade, I really felt blue. I peeked through the crack and I looked at the track, the one going back to you. And what did I do? I thought about you.
Sylvia Sims, conducted by Frank Sinatra, with a little bit of an assist from Vincent Falca.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain.
You yourself wound up getting fired by Sinatra and then going back to work for him, and this time leaving him of your own volition. So it's kind of one for one, as it were.
Yeah.
But you must have been you must have been like having your world yanked out from under you.
Well,
when it happened.
It was one thing I learned from him. You don't look over your shoulder. Look ahead. Similar things happened to him too. What happened was, he had to make a choice. Irv Kotler was making life so difficult because Irv, for whatever his reasons, was jealous of the attention that he was paying to me. And Mr. Sinatra's manager, who was the furthest thing from musically talented, didn't know what to believe one way or the other. Mr. Sinatra was loyal to Irv Kotler, and I admire him for that. His choice. Costa told him to keep me. Everybody else told him to keep me. They all told me this later. But he decided to keep Irv out of his loyalty, and I respect that. But when I was gone, Jilly told me like 3 weeks later he wanted to get me back, and it took 2 years. But he finally called me. He had right. His manager call me, and I did go back with him. But I had a talk with Mr. S, and I explained to him that I had two children to raise and that I couldn't take the chance that this could happen again. So I asked his permission to be able to work with the other people, because in those 2 years I had developed other clients, as well as him, except when it would conflict, and then, of course, I would take him. And right. I expected him to say no, but he said okay. And it worked out for a while. And then it got to the point where I was working with Pia Zadora, and we were doing a lot of concerts. And Mr. Sinatra wanted me to go to – we were going to go with Benny Goodman, but Benny died. We were going to go to Russia. And I had to make it – I wrote Mr. Sinatra a letter, and I told him – I explained this all to him. I told him I have to be – my first obligation is to my family and my children. And I can't take the chance that this could happen again. And, you know, so with your blessing, I'm gone. Right. And you know that I've been told by people close to him that I'm the only musician that had that kind of a parting with him that he remained friendly with. Every time I would see him, he would pinch my cheek, and I mean he remained and then eventually Pia became his opening act, and I was back with him again. So everything worked out. Everything works out for the best, I believe, if you keep a positive attitude. And again, I credit him to a great extent, of course, with my parents as well, but I credit right. him professionally with teaching me that. And I was disappointed when I left him, of course, but I wasn't crushed. I knew what I had to do, and I went and did it, and it eventually paid off, and I got my reward, if you will.
Well, Frank's manager may not have appreciated what you brought to the performance, but other of his non-musical associates did. There was that moment when you and Don Rickles pull up in the parking lot simultaneously, and Don Rickles gets out of the car and looks at you and goes, "Well, look who's here, Frank Sinatra's idol."
You know, I don't know if you're aware of this, Mark, perhaps you are, but right now I'm doing a show at the Palazzo here in Las Vegas. I mentioned this a little earlier, which is a recreation of the of an evening with Mr. Sinatra. And in order to do this show, I had to give up my Don Rickles. Don had asked me to be his music director, and I was for the past year and a half. And I've known Don a long time, but got to work with him finally in his later life, you know, when he was 88 and 89 years old.
Right.
But I got to tell you, this is one of the most brilliant, I can't say enough words about this guy. Not only is he the greatest, the unique, there's nobody that right. ever came close to Don Rickles, but as a human being, he's just the nicest guy. I mean, every night in the dressing room after the show, he would thank me. And I just can't say enough good things about him. And he's still out there, man. He's 89 years old, and he's still killing them, boy. I'll tell you, he's something else.
Well, you conducted, I think, during a marvelous period in the in Frank Sinatra's live act, and you conducted all the great charts: Nelson Riddle, Gordon Jenkins, Billy May, Neil Hefti, Quincy Jones, Johnny Mandel, all the great guys, and There must be a couple of ones that were kind of special to you that you just, I mean, obviously he picked the set and there were ones he'd want to do more than others, but there must be ones that that came up and you were glad that was in the bill that night. Special ones that just are a little extra with you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Something was one of those. Right. Very Good Year was one of those. Got You Under My Skin was one of those. Got the World on a String was one of those. Certainly New York, New York was one of those. Guess I'll Hang My Tears Out to Dry. God, I love that.
This is a beautiful song. The torch I carry is handsome. It's worth its heartache in ransom. And now when the twilight steals, I know how the lady in the harbor feels. When I want rain, I get sunny weather. I'm just as blue as the sky. Since love has gone, can't get myself together. Guess I'll hang my tears out to dry. Friends ask me out, but I tell them I'm busy. I've got to get another alibi. I just sit at home and ask myself, who is he? Yes, I'll hang my tears out to dry. Dry little teardrops, my little teardrops, hanging on a string of dreams. My little memories, fly little memories, remind her of our crazy scheme.
Somebody said, just forget about her. And I gave that treatment to try. Strangely enough, I got along without her. Then one day she passed me right by. Oh, well, I guess I'll hang my tears out to dry.
Pretty song. What a marvelous song. What a wonderful song.
Now, that's not the easiest one to conduct.
No,
is it?
No, not at all.
That's right, because I think on the original album, he wasn't happy with Nelson Riddle's conducting of his own arrangement, and did it again with Felix Slatkin a couple of weeks later. That again has that where he's sort of suspending the pulse.
I'll say, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, and as he got old, you see, I started with Mr. Sinatra just after his 60th birthday. He was 60 on December 12th of 1975. And right after that is when I started with him. And I noticed in the next 10 years when I was with him, even then, even during those periods, he would take songs he had recorded when he was in his 40s and 50s and just fine-tune them to the point. And that's what was so great for me, was to be involved in that fine-tuning of these things and to make them. And I remember the first night I conducted for him at Radio City Music Hall, we did Very Good Year. And in the instrumental sections in between each of the verses, he turned to me. The only thing I remember that night was when he turned to me in the middle of those and he said, "Move it." Because he wanted the instrumental sections in between each of the vocal verses to be at a brighter pace, because I remember going that was my first night conducting for him, and it was at Radio City Music Hall. And as I told you before, Leonard Bernstein was in the audience. All of these great people that I admired all my life, and I'm standing up there, and I don't remember a thing except that. Right. I remember him saying, "Move." But the next thing I remember is walking back to the hotel after the show, wondering whether I had done well or not. And I'm going to tell you, the concentration level is something you can only describe, believe
so,
me.
So the entire event has been kind of blanked from your memory, except that you played the instrumental passages. It was a very good year too slow.
He said, "Move it." And I did. And do you know that it's God's truth? I do not remember the repertoire of that evening at all. Right. I don't remember any of it except that moment. somebody would have to give me a list of the songs we did that night for me to have a recollection of what we did, because, you can only imagine what it was like. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, what am I doing here?
Right. Probably the first thing I ever recorded in the Harry James days. Beautiful new arrangement by Nelson Riddle. All or nothing at all. Half a love never appealed to me. If your heart never could yield to me, no, I'd rather have nothing at all. All or nothing at all. If it's love, there is no in between.
Why begin then cry for something that might have been? No, I'd rather have nothing at all. Please don't bring your lips close to my cheek. Don't you smile or I'll be lost beyond recall. The kiss in your eyes and the touch of your hand leaves me weak. And my heart, it may grow dizzy and fall. And if I fell under the spell of your call, I'd be caught in the undertow. So you see, I gotta say no, no, all or nothing at all. If I fell under the spell of your call, I'd be caught in the undertow. So you see, I have got to say no, no, all or nothing at all.
Nelson Riddle's marvelous arrangement of All or Nothing at All. Isn't that a great chart? Thank you. Thank you very much.
We all made mistakes. He made mistakes too. You know, we all make them. The important thing was him is don't make the same one twice. But, I mean, I remember when we did Trilogy, particularly in the third, which was all original equipment material, and it took me a year working with him to get him so he knew that stuff and could right. could go in there and record it. And when we did record it, there were times when he didn't sing it as well as I knew he could. And I wouldn't go up to him and say, hey, Mr. Sinatra, no, that wasn't too good. I would go up to him and I would say, you know, boss, maybe you should go in and listen to that take and see what you think of it. And he would go in and then he would come out and say, well, let's do it again. He would hear what I was talking about.
Francis Albert Sinatra.
And I sing love songs mostly after dark, mostly in saloons. I've had some very good years. In those firecracker years, and I don't want to miss a thing when the future appears.
Well, at the end of that recording session, which was the end of the three albums set, so it was the last recording session, which we did at the Shrine in Los Angeles, he left the building when the recording session ended, and I stayed, of course, collected the music and so forth and so on. And my wife was with me, and when we walked out of the Shrine to our parking lot where our car was, when I walked into the parking lot, he was standing there next to his car waiting for me. And I walked up to him, and he put his hand out to me. And he said to me, "Thanks, kid." Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget that as long as I live, because that was his way of, you know, and that, those are the moments in my life that all the money in the world could never take away.
Chester to write me one more song. I'll get Lefty to make me one more chart, and I'll make one more record with the best musicians in the world.
I know this music will survive, just as Bach and Beethoven and Schumann and Schubert and everything else. It'll have a more limited audience because young people, you know, listen to Katy Perry and things like that, and they love that, and that's fine. But this music will survive. It will just have a smaller audience as time progresses, but it's eternal, and I will try to keep it that way as long as I can.
Well, thanks very much for sharing some of your memories of a spectacular time. And I would urge anyone to grab your book, which is called Frankly, Just Between Us. And a wonderful, I said right at the beginning that you look about a third of his age compared to of Kotler and the other guys in the band. And it's got a fabulous picture of Sinatra looking pretty trim in middle age, and you looking about 12 years old on the cover. It's a marvelous read. So, Vincent Falcone, thanks very much for talking to us today.
Thank you, Mark.
This is for you. I hear music when I look at you, a beautiful theme of every dream I ever knew. Down deep in my heart, I hear it play. I feel it start and then melt away. I hear music when I touch your hand, beautiful melody from some enchanted land. Down deep in my heart, I hear it say, is this the day? I alone have heard this lovely strain. I alone have heard this glad refrain. Must it be forever inside of me? Why can't I let it go? Why can't I let you know
Why can't I let you know the song my heart would sing? Beautiful melody of love and youth and spring. The music is sweet and the words are true, and the song is you. Spring. The music is sweet and the words are true. Jerome Kern, Billy Mays arranger. I hear music when I look at you. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I think I'll get some roller skates and go with those kids out there.
On the Town is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises. All rights reserved.